Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you've been in a classroom in the past 5 years, you may have become accustomed to interruptions on campus, from no outdoor activities due to wildfire smoke or heat waves, to school closures due to snow days, storms, or even wildfires, not to mention distance learning during the pandemic. Although we may not reflexively connect climate change and just extreme weather to learning, it certainly has created disruptions for students of all grades. And this impact is gaining notice from state lawmakers to therapists and even school districts. Joining us is Srishti Prabha, CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter, to share what they learned about how climate-fueled school disruptions are impacting education. Good morning, Srishti.
Good morning, Vicky.
So we have had just weeks of extreme intense weather. When did you start thinking about how the climate impacts the classroom?
I actually started thinking about it when we were having heat waves and wildfires. You know, reporting on this beat, even during the pandemic, we already started to see all these glaringly obvious problems. And so I just assumed that this would also be an issue when it came to the climate crisis. When I asked the district similar questions back when the heat waves were happening, I wasn't getting very clear responses. And I think it's because this is a developing crisis and now school systems will have to start accounting for this. And then, of course, how does this all compound with the already heightened race and income disparities in education?
Right. And we may not necessarily link climate change to traditional learning. What are some perhaps overlooked ways that climate change shapes or even disrupts access to education?
Well, I started to notice a few things when I started to interview parents and families, and then I had conversations with experts. So overarchingly, some things that I started to notice was that, you know, California will have to build in a climate-based curriculum at different age group levels to have these conversations with kids. They might have to add provisional days to the academic calendar, and they have to equip students and families, including thinking about childcare, with strategies to cope with the regularity of catastrophic events. Otherwise, akin to the pandemic, we'll have, you know, repercussions that are consistent with what we saw during the pandemic. So, you know, learning loss, heightened achievement gaps, and an increase in mental health episodes. And lower income students of color will continue to be disproportionately affected, widening the opportunity gap.
And these winter storms are just among a series of extreme weather events or disasters in recent years, not to mention the pandemic impacting learning. Are you able to kind of help us visualize or even quantify how much this has disrupted school learning?
Yeah, 107 schools closed on January 9th in Sac County alone. And this is important to note because some kids rely for their food from the schools. So schools still had to provide food even if there isn't learning. The California Legislative Analyst Office report found that from 2019 to 2020, 1,600 schools closed due to wildfires. So this isn't, you know, uncommon anymore. It's something we really need to start thinking about. And the California Legislative Analyst Office is actually proposing ways to mitigate these things. So now you're having power outages, no Wi-Fi, no school. And over time, I think it's pretty apparent that you're going to have severe impact on learning with the constantly changing atmosphere. You know, kids were supposed to go back to school and have finals in 2 weeks. Are they still going to be able to appropriately give those finals, thinking about all the things that are happening in the world around them? I'm not sure.
Given that, you know, the Legislative Analyst Office, state lawmakers are taking notice, you also talk to school districts and also parents, this isn't just purely anecdotal experiences. Is there actually data that's beginning to show this impact on education?
So educationally, not so much. The data isn't really there, but psychiatrists and policymakers are aware of the possible impacts just because of the pandemic. And I think there are real repercussions with climate change and its effect on mental health. And so I have some anecdotes, and one of them is from this Black student at Kennedy High School, William Smothers Jr. III.
For mental health challenges, I would say that schools should be more supportive of it, because we are currently in a weird time. You know, it's just every single day.
Yeah. And as you hit home, A classroom and a school campus is way more than just education. It's a community. It's also food, especially like Sac City Unified. 75% of students are on free and reduced lunch. So aside from education in a traditional sense, did you get a sense of how the routine of school disruptions and closures has other impacts?
Yeah, like I said, I got some anecdotally. Some insights came from the legislative analyst's office in California, where they were describing that with fewer resources and possible void in childcare access, low-income students become the most vulnerable in the event of a school closure. So when SCUSD closed their doors, so did the region's daycares. And Shannon Scott, a business owner and a mother of four children, tells me a little bit about that.
The Sacramento schools are closed, so daycare is closed. So I'm a business owner, so then I had to go cancel all of my clients. If I don't work, I don't eat. So that means no pay for the day.
Yeah, I think this is quite, you know, poignant. And what she's hitting on is that there needs to be some support network for parents in the case of a closure. And then she talks a little bit about how her two older kids go to the Fortune schools and the Fortune schools remained open. And Fortune schools, for those that don't know, support Black parents and Black excellence and Black students. And so you have to be thinking about the community when you're closing the school. And she was saying that, you know, the Fortune schools provide an environment where kids can come so their parents can continue to go to work. And that's important for her.
Yeah, because life and demands don't stop when schools close or when weather is creating closures.
Exactly.
During your reporting, there's this term, a couple pieces of terminology that I learned for the first time. The first one is this word eco-anxiety. Explain what that is.
Yeah, so eco-anxiety is the worries associated with observing the irrevocable impact of climate change and the resulting feeling of hopelessness. So it's kind of a newly emerging mental health symptom connected to the climate crisis. And I actually got a student that kind of conveyed some of those emotions to me. Her name is Kylie Huang, and she's a 17-year-old Mira Loma High School student.
Seeing how much like the climate has shifted, weather patterns are being drastically changing, and it's really nerve-wracking to feel like there's nothing that you can do about it. Because I feel like even though we have all of these environmental clubs and we're trying to be our own advocates, I feel like there's only so much that we can do. Before going into this pandemic and everything, I always felt like we had more time.
Yeah, given that this is emerging, you know, in the field, eco-anxiety, has there been the start to kind of gathering data and research to support that youth are experiencing eco-anxiety?
Yeah, actually there is. And Blue Shield conducted a national survey, the Youth Climate and Mental Health Survey, between 2020 and 2022, where they surveyed 1,300 young people between ages of 14 and 24, and 369 of those were based in California. Dr. Nicole Stelter, who is the director of behavioral health for Blue Shield of California, told me the study revealed an explicit connection between physical health, mental health, and the environment, with 75%, or I think 3 out of 4 children, experiencing at least one health issue related to an environmental event in California.
And start to feel a little relentless, right? Whether we're talking about wildfires, heat waves, severe weather, flooding, when it's immediately impacting someone, it's right there interrupting my day-to-day. And that has a pretty pervasive impact.
And then there's the intersection of race and income. The same survey found that nearly half of Black youth feel that the climate crisis and racial injustice go hand in hand. And more than 4 in 5 Black youth say there's not enough discussion about how climate change impacts Black, Indigenous, and people of color.
Yeah, and more broadly, there's this more nuanced kind of mourning that comes with extreme weather. People in the city of Sacramento experienced it when there were roughly 1,000 downed trees, and that's part of your life. It's part of your community. So these places are habits that we grow to have this sentimental quality to it, from the trees that I mentioned, building snowmen, even playing in the rain. And I learned from your reporting there's actually a name for this type of loss, like solastalgia. How did you come to learn about this type of grieving?
I'm sure like many others, I understood the concept way before I knew the word. First, I heard about just the general idea from the Sac City Unified School District Communication Director Al Goldberg, who was keeping a pulse on the families and their in the district.
It's been a wild 6 months. We've gone from the hottest day of the year to now we're losing like all these iconic trees. I mean, you know, I see these stories on social media where people are talking about like this tree hit a home and it's not a home that they know of, but they're saying like, oh, I pass this tree every day.
And then I spoke to mental health professionals, and that's kind of how I got to know the term soulstalgia. Dr. Robin Cooper is an associate clinical professor at UC San Francisco, and she's also the president of the Climate Psychiatry Alliance. She was the one who mentioned this term, and she was talking about young people's loss of innocence.
Don't my kids jump in the rain puddles, the giving up of those delights of childhood that represent a kind of grieving about the impacts of the climate experiences on our lives and the changes in the world we live in.
It's complex and it has to be considered as part of childhood development in schools, right?
Right. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Srishti Prabha, explaining how climate-fueled school disruptions and closures are impacting education for students. So getting to some solution, something tangible, how should adults talk about climate change with children? Because it can feel scary and even adults feel helpless.
Right. So Dr. Robin Cooper suggests introducing them to their natural environment and explaining how harm can come to them by introducing them to the elements around them. She also says books and stories have been a great way to help children grapple with fears and anxieties. And she suggests that schools and parents collaborate, you know, on ways to communicate heavy topics like the climate crisis.
Kids think concretely. They distort ideas. They're not able to detach. So for a kid to say to his mom, am I going to die? When is the world going to die? That's really concrete and really scary. So we want to introduce and not avoid what's happening environmentally in the world from younger children, but think about it in important developmental ways.
And for older youth, she suggests actionable items such as empowering them to make climate mitigation efforts of their own in their surrounding communities. I kind of had Kylie Huang talk earlier. She's a Mira Loma High School student, and she's finding ways to quell her anxieties.
I still feel optimistic that there is a way that we can help turn the tide. We've had a lot of discussions about how we can help make change by ourselves, helping to reduce waste in like landfills and choosing more sustainable options.
Yeah, and that's been growing in recent years with youth taking actionable change for climate change, you know, from Greta Thunberg to even Fridays for Youth. And so that's growing and that's really encouraging as well, finding this type of optimism. From a family perspective, I mean, you mentioned that books and storytelling is a great way to explain the challenges to especially younger children. What other resources should families seek out for the home?
Yeah, books are a great one. And this is more for kids that are fourth grade or above, because a lot of times reading comprehension and looking at an image and really taking it in and understanding its meaning takes time. So Dr. Robin Cooper gave me a few books that you could potentially use at your home for kids that are fourth grade or above. And you can find this list also in my story, but I will name some of them. One is called Coco's Fire, Changing Climate Anxiety into Climate Action. Another is Fur and the Feather Stand Together. And the last is How Charlie, His Great-Grandfather, and Supermax Saved the World.
Those sound like a lot of fun. Given that you talked to or you read reports from the Legislative Analyst Office, you talked to school districts, what are some solutions from a policy perspective from state lawmakers or even the Department of Education?
Right. They noted that there are key considerations for climate change impacts on K through 12 education. And one of them, the biggest one, is school closures as a response to the five climate hazards of extreme heat, drought, wildfires, erosion, and increased risk of flooding. So it recommends avoiding disruptions to school because closures can place students at a higher risk of experiencing learning loss and poorer academic outcomes. The report also talks a little bit about how traumatic climate-related closures can have an impact on the mental health of students, and which can also affect their ability to learn. And then, of course, lastly, with fewer resources and possible void in childcare access, Again, low-income students become more vulnerable in the event of school closure, the report says.
Before we let you go, I mean, this reporting was very deep and vast. How did it expand your understanding as an education reporter of the learning challenges facing youth today?
There just needs to be more in the budget for mental health and an anticipated approach for the looming climate change and climate crisis, right? So Governor Gavin Newsom recently announced $480 million to 54 projects in California to improve the behavioral health infrastructure for children and youth. And Sacramento County is part of a project called Project Calwell, which is and they will be in the second cohort, which is a grant to fund sustainable mental health approaches in schools. So I'm going to keep tabs on these on the progress of all these things and let you guys know what I find out.
Just the tip of the iceberg for you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shrishti.
Thanks, Vicky.
That is Shrishti Prabha, Cap Radio Sacramento education reporter, explaining how climate-fueled school disruptions are impacting education for students. Up next, the snowpack in the Sierra is off to its best start in years. But is all of this snow too much of a good thing? We'll head up to Tahoe to learn how locals are faring. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. After California endured some of the driest winters on record, a wave of 9 atmospheric rivers in less than a month has buried the Sierra in an impressive blanket of snow. The satellite images being shared of our snowpack are really just quite stunning, and so are the numbers behind the images. As of this week, the snowpack in the central and the southern Sierra is above 250% of normal for this time of year, and that's according to DWR in California. And even with more snow came down last night, it begs the question, is too much a good thing? Under all of that snow are communities who live and work in the aftermath of each of these storms, which has also resulted in power outages, along with closures and dangerous conditions on some key roadways. We're going to hear directly from locals to learn how they fare during the intense rounds of weather. Joining us in a few minutes is Carol Chaplin with Visit Lake Tahoe. But first, we're going to hear from Alex Hunt, owner of Mountain Slice Cafe and Creamery in Tahoe City. Welcome back to Insight, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you've joined us several times since 2020. You're kind of our bellwether for all things, you know, on the west shore of Tahoe. How are you and your community doing after the series of storms over the past month?
We are getting absolutely buried. But in all honesty, we definitely take it with open arms. We need it and we understand that. But it has been a lot.
Well, paint a picture, because a lot of us couldn't even get up there, even if people wanted to, because conditions were dangerous and people should have stayed put. So paint a picture of what Tahoe City looks like if we were to stand outside your shop right now.
Man, right now in town, it is, I mean, the snowbanks from all the parking lots and all the surrounding businesses are just sky high, up to about the top of the light posts. You can't really see a lot of the signs for the businesses. So luckily, a lot of people are relying on Google Maps to kind of take them exactly where they need to go, because if you're just driving around, you wouldn't be able to see a lot of these places from the road. It's just mounds of snow everywhere.
Yeah, and the snowpack is great when it comes to curbing the state's drought. It's the state's largest reservoir, so to speak. But how have these storms and the snowpack impacted both your daily life as a local and the business that you own?
So specifically where I live in Tahoma on the West Shore, we get a lot of snow here. And so we have just been dealing with having to get out of the neighborhood, which has been a daily battle. That's always fun. And you never know, you know, what street you're going to be able to go down, because there's a lot of times a car is just stuck in the middle of the road. Someone's either abandoned it or there's a bunch of people trying to get it out from the middle of the road. And so you kind of have to go down a lot of side streets to figure out the best way to get out of the neighborhood. And so as far as our daily lives go, you know, where we live in Tahoma, we do deal with a lot of power outages. And so we're always stacking wood and gathering wood. We chop a lot of wood in the summertime, myself and my wife, and we stack that up in an area where we're still able to access it, even if we do have a lot of snow. And so we have to bring a lot of wood in during times of power outages and just make sure that we're prepared to have all our batteries charged and our backup battery packs and everything like that. And as far as the shop goes, the shop is the real thing with the shop is we are a small place and we're kind of tucked in the bottom floor of a two-story building, kind of under a staircase. And so we have to deal with a lot of just snow management in the front of the shop, kind of where to put the snow, maintaining our paths. And then because we are a street side storefront, technically, I'm responsible for my sidewalk out front there. So I have to maintain the sidewalk for the city as well as the fire hydrant. We try to maintain that. However, big shout out to our fire department. They came and helped me shovel out the rest of it the other day. So that was really, that was awesome. But it's been fun. The big thing is just snow management, where to put all the snow that keeps coming in and how to keep everybody happy when they've spent 5, 6, 7 hours in their car trying to make it up to Tahoe and they just want a quick slice of pizza.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. I mean, it's snow. I mean, it can be so incredibly heavy, especially when it's on roofs. It can be damaging as well, not to mention just a lot of work to keep you and your home and your business safe. I mean, even public safety agencies around Tahoe earlier this week were warning of the dangers of the excessive snow loads that could damage gas lines and propane tanks. Was that a concern for you as well?
Not for us specifically at the shop. The big thing that's been kind of happening with these last few flurry of storms that we've had is it's been intermittent with rain. And so what's happening is a lot of the drains in the on the streets, a lot of the city drainage has been blocked because of the snow. And then when the rain comes and piles it up, it's kind of got nowhere to flow. And so a lot of it's backflowing into restaurants, or a lot of it's backflowing into parking lots, or for us specifically, we were dealing with not really flooding in the shop, but flooding just outside the shop. And so maintaining those clear walkways so people can walk not only to the shop, but also on the sidewalk to make sure that they're not walking in the street, because the street just gets narrower, more narrow and more narrow as the snow piles up around it. And so we try to maintain that sidewalk. And that's really the big thing that we worry about. There are a lot of down power lines that happen with the trees that get real heavy and fall down. And so we do have to be on the lookout for that, but that's more so the power companies, you know, they're pretty on top of their game up here. And as far as our power outages go, you know, the longest one we've had has maybe been 4 or 5 hours, as opposed to a few days like it's been in the past. So it's been good this year so far in that regard.
That's good to hear. Did you have to close at all?
We had to close one day. We kind of do a little bit of a power outage protocol where if we do lose power at the shop, because I am electric ovens at the shop, I can hold heat for a good 45 minutes in my oven. So I can still pump out a few pizzas. So we let people know that we can still take orders for a little bit. And then if the power doesn't kick back on, then we just have to make sure that we put all of the stuff, all of our perishables, either in a cooler that we can pack with snow, obviously from the outside, or stuff that we have to throw away, but we try to minimize that the best we can. And so there's been one day where we've had to do that, but other than that, it's been good. There's been a lot of glitches and, you know, little power outages, you know, for a minute or two here and there, but nothing substantial where it's really affected our business too much.
Given that you're originally from the East Coast and then you opened up your shop in Tahoma, Tahoe City in 2017, I believe, so about 5 years ago, how does this winter rank compared to other wintry events that you have experienced in your life?
We've had some good winters up here, some big winters. Last winter was not really a big one. It just came all at once. And so it's a lot of that kind of similar vibe where it's just, where do we put all the snow and what do we do with it? However, this has been more of an extended period of time. So I feel like we're really having to manage that for a lot longer of a period of time. And so in that regard, I feel like this winter, you said so yourself at the beginning of the program, we're 213% over the annual pack right now that we're supposed to be. So, I mean, we're going to be lasting well into the summertime, which is great for us, keeps the water flowing and all the lakes and the rivers around here and whatnot. And so that's a big change from winters in the past. You know, we deal with a lot of water shortages when it comes to the flowing of the Truckee River and other surrounding lakes and creeks and streams. And so that has adverse effects down the line as well. And so with this big fall that we're seeing, it's definitely going to help out with that. And that's been the big kind of difference that we've seen from this winter than other winters past. I will say the lake has been looking pretty low these last couple of years. So this will be a nice little refill for it. And that makes us all happy around here for sure.
Yeah, an overdue boost. Absolutely. Given that tourists are the backbone of the economy in Tahoe, but they can also present some challenges, what is your message for visitors who are eager to come up and enjoy the snow, but, you know, as you mentioned, may be a little frustrated with how long it takes to get up there?
So we love everybody that comes up. Obviously, like you said, it is the backbone. It's the heartbeat of our town. It's what keeps a lot of us going and keeps a lot of these jobs going for a lot of the locals that do live up here. So what I would say is to continue that positive flow of people coming in. Just make sure that the people that are coming in, that you guys are safe. Make sure that you have the equipment to make it up here. Know that there is a good chance you might get stuck in your car for a little bit. And if that does happen, make sure you have the proper supplies in your car to maintain that time safely that you're stuck in your car. And the big thing is don't push it. You know, the snow's going to be here for a long, long time. I'm telling you guys. So don't risk it. It's not worth it. If the risk outweighs the reward, then definitely, error on the side of caution. That's the big thing, is people just coming up in cars that either aren't adequate or not having chains, or thinking they can make it when they really can't. And we get it. You know, everybody wants to chase the powder, and especially because we have a lot of it now. But it will be here for a while. You know, make sure you can get up here safely. Make sure that you can keep getting up here safely, because we want to see you guys keep coming up here and helping us out and spending the money here in town. That definitely helps us as business owners, and it helps keep the local economy flowing. But we want to make sure that you guys can continue to do it. You know, maintaining your safety is a big thing of importance for sure.
Finally, Alex, given that we've been checking in on you for 2 years now, since the beginning of the pandemic in early 2022, we have talked to you about a variety of issues and challenges, from the pandemic to wildfires to supply chain issues, inflation, and now we're talking to you following a series of intense storms. How do you reflect on the past 2 years? What stands out to you?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to you guys. I really appreciate being on the show, and it's always a blast talking to you guys and giving my perspective from what I see in town. I feel like, Mountain Slice tries to represent Tahoe City and Tahoe as a whole the best that we can and as true as we can. And when I look back on the last 2 years, it's been a roller coaster, but it's been a roller coaster for everybody, not just myself and not just for us up here. Granted, with the wildfires coupled with tourism being struggled by with the wildfires, and then the snow now and everything like that, I feel like we do have a little bit of some special standards here that we have to kind of abide by and try to adapt to. And so The one thing I will say is the adaptability of our town and the people that live here are phenomenal. And a big shout out to our community and, you know, helping out and staying positive in times that become very difficult and times that we really need to band together and show our support as a community for one another and for the country as a whole. And I feel like, you know, in these times, we really try to represent ourselves in a way that, you know, we are locals and we do love Tahoe and we do want to treat it as our home and we want people to treat it as our home when they come up here as well. And so we just ask everyone to be respectful and just really, you know, the last 2 years, it's been a struggle, but we made it and we're still making it. And everybody, you know, big thanks to everybody that's helped contribute to that.
Alex Hunt is the owner of Mountain Slice Cafe and Creamery on the West Shore. Thank you so much, Alex, as always.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, hopefully I'll go up and grab a slice one day.
Come grab a slice and check out the band, too, Pipe Down. Big shout out to my band. And yeah, thank you guys again. Love you guys so much.
You're listening to Insight here on CAF Radio. Now we want to bring in Carol Chaplin with Visit Lake Tahoe. Welcome to Insight, Carol.
Good morning, Vicki.
All right, so let's start with the glass half full. What has been the best part about the 3 weeks of snowfall and storms that you've seen in Tahoe?
Well, the mountains are in incredible condition right now. That's definitely glass half full. I was up at Heavenly just the day before yesterday, and we finally had some blue skies, and the vibe was so positive. I think we're, you know, we get about 300 days of sunshine a year, and I hadn't realized until I was up there skiing in the most incredible conditions how spoiled we are with that sunshine. You know, everybody was, you know, vitamin D, get it while you can.
Yeah, I think
we're starting to get a little bit of sunshine right now, but the mountains are in incredible condition. Alex said it well. As far as the lake goes, we've all been concerned about the lake level in the past couple of years. Obviously, we've experienced some fairly horrific wildfire in the last couple of years, and so that's always on our mind. And it's all good. It's more half full than half empty when you're shoveling for the second time in the day, the third time in the day. Maybe it doesn't feel quite that way, but at the end of it all, it's gorgeous. We've got snow for a long time, as Alex mentioned, and we've got a good season coming up after that.
What were some of the challenges? Because there is such thing as too much of a good thing. I mean, I would imagine there were some closures in Tahoe, vacation cancellations. So what have been some of the challenges that, you know, locals in the business community endured?
Well, I think, you know, the challenges come, you know, I've been up here for a long time. You don't even want to know how long. They probably should kick me out. But there's been years where we've gotten some gentle snow 4 or 5 days a week, and we've had these, you know, accumulations. This has kind of come fast and furious, you know, a couple inches an hour. And also Alex had mentioned, you know, the rain in between. So that adds challenges. You know, getting to work, getting home from work, the road closures you spoke of. We've had the highways closed for safety reasons, for either avalanche control, boulders, just the incredible slow go that you have to take in consideration in these kind of conditions. So, but you know, we live in a mountain town, and this is kind of what we do. I think that's the biggest challenge. Obviously we've had some ups and downs over the last couple of years. And so everybody, when we saw these snow patterns coming in, these winter weather patterns, everybody's going, yes, this is going to be a great visitor year. And then there's, as you mentioned, cancellations or rescheduling. Hopefully we make up for it, you know, in the next few weeks. People will know that the conditions are going to be great. And we'll probably, I don't want to put words in the ski resorts' mouths necessarily, but I'm pretty sure that they will extend their seasons past the original close date. So we get that bonus as well.
Yeah, I am sure you're going to get some long overdue pent up tourists and visitors who want to enjoy and take in all of that snow. You touched upon this, like over the past couple of years, I mean, Tahoe has seen its fair share of weather or just climate related problems, from the Caldor fire to wildfire smoke from other wildfires and just extreme weather cycles like we just experienced, not to mention including drought. I mean, how are businesses really adapting to these weather changes? And I think more broadly, like, how is Tahoe's climate and the area's economic success, how is it interconnected?
Well, that's a great question. In so many ways, we're interconnected. You know, over 60% of our economy is based in tourism. And so we really depend on those people coming up, and we depend on that experience being really good. So, you know, the challenge under these situations and during the smoke, you know, incidences, is, you know, is it going to be a good experience for our visitor so that they'll want to come back or they have a good memory of it? You know, that's part of the economic interaction with a guest, is not only just having them come here once, but having them come back again. So I think that we want everybody to have a good experience, and we want them to be safe and have fun and enjoy the outdoors just as much as we do, that the people that live here. You know, we are very dependent on tourism. It's changed over the last couple of years. So we have some different patterns that we're seeing, which are interesting. The adaptation that you talked about in terms of businesses. I was on the lift the other day with a couple of great guys from San Diego who are working remote this next couple of weeks.
While going down the slopes.
Exactly. They were on the chair, you know, and working. And, you know, the flexibility in our work areas and our work environment is something that I think, bodes well for our destination in particular. You can find a place to stay. You can work in the morning and ski in the afternoon or vice versa. And that happens in the afternoon as well. So the adaptation is ongoing. And I think, again, that comes with that mountain town experience, is that we just never know what's going to happen next. And we brace ourselves and then we respond.
Well, thank you for sharing how y'all write it out. Carol Chaplin is the president and CEO of Visit Tahoe. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Still ahead, we're going to speak with a classical composer and musician about finding her voice through mentorship to develop her sound. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Wu Fei is a classically trained composer, singer, and master of the guzheng, a 21-string Chinese instrument with musical origins at least 2,500 years old. Her years at the China Conservatory of Music helped develop her abilities, but that would change when she moved to California. Attending Mills College in Oakland, Fei was able to experiment musically and with mentorship found her voice. In Cap Radio's new podcast, A Music of Their Own, host Majel Connery speaks with Wu Fei about how she overcomes tragedy, developing her sound and a new vision for herself with the support of mentors. That influential mentor and professor would be Fred Frith, known for his work in progressive and avant-garde bands that pushed what instruments can do. This mentorship would also evolve into music collaborations, showcasing Fei's talent and, most importantly, her voice and sound. So with that, we welcome Fei and Fred to Insight. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having us.
Wu, I want to start with you. Your early musical education began at the China Conservatory of Music, and then you would go on to attend Mills College in Oakland. You know, talk to us about crossing an ocean and going to another country and your musical beginnings, your origin story.
I was basically chosen by a couple of Chinese music professors. My mother told me I was about 2 years old. So my whole life before I actually got to Mills was pretty much, I was put on that path. So, and I was already, you know, 20, early mid-20s when I got to Mills. So it was mostly in the conservatory training with theory. You know, you can think of hours of practice, which at the time, you know, no child would voluntarily enjoy 6 hours of practice or a 2 minimum daily. So now I look back, I do really appreciate all that foundation that was put on my path. But when I came to the States, I knew, because when I grew up in Beijing, that was the most transforming era of modern China. That was when I was my childhood. So I was fascinated by outside of either China or the music world. That one day I discovered from bootleg CDs. You know, that's the my outside of sound of I was through bootleg CDs. I heard Jimi Hendrix, but played on string quartet. Which I didn't know any, either it was actually the Kronos Quartet playing Jimi Hendrix, and I was, oh, that sound somehow. So I wanted to come to a place where it's just see what's not what I haven't been trained. So as far as I could, because it was just a fascinating world.
Yeah. Fred, you're a well-known multi-instrumentalist. You're also a mentor to Fei. What stood out about her work?
Well, it was interesting because I was confronted with somebody who was confident, extremely disciplined, a virtuoso already on her instrument. And she was studying composition with me. And what was interesting in the light of all of that was the fact that she had clearly spent most of her life doing things that were expected of her. So she was basically trying to figure out what I wanted or what people wanted. And she hadn't spent time figuring out what she wanted. And so I think for me, the interest was to try to confront her with herself and say, well, what do you want to do? And what's the best way to do that? That's how it kind of began.
Fei, what stood out to you about Fred, who was a professor, you know, while you were a student?
First of all, I had friends who just saw my paper where the first day I walked on campus says, oh, do you know who your professor is? I was like, who? Fred Frith. I was like, you know, that was my whole world. It's like, I have really entered an unknown world, but I took everything so seriously. And so the first lesson I remember walking to, basically played most of my compositions, you know, CD to Fred. And, you know, like my most accomplishment in my first 20 years or something. And then Fred, looked at me and said, I hear wonderful craft, but I don't hear Fei. You know, at that moment, I felt I need to just stop and rethink my life. It was no one in my life had asked me what I wanted, just like Fred just mentioned. No one asked me. I was put on the road to achieve all the expectation, trophy child, trophy student, and anything was given to me, boom, 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 just knock that out of the way. But why do I write music? And so I couldn't also, at that moment, when I listened to the music I wrote again, I was like, I felt I really couldn't hear myself. And Fred told me that, you know, you've got this tremendous training and structure and craft. You are never going to lose it, but you need to just let whatever that you feel come out, and then it's going to form itself. And it was actually the most scary moment to do it like that. First of all, to think like that and then to do it. So, and then now I feel, when I look back with many years of experience, I felt I actually had a very strong pair of wings as a bird, but I never flew. Mm-hmm. I never used my wings. So what Fred, that moment with the enlightenment was, I tried my wings for the first time and I felt fantastic.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's, I mean, beautiful and also profound. And Fred, the reason why you're able to mentor in this way and give this type of really deep advice is because of your own personal experience. You're an original member of the English experimental rock group Henry Cow, released an album on this iconic independent label, SST Records, founded by Black Flag member Greg Ginn. You know, we're going to take a quick listen to get a taste of your creative experience in a creative period in your life. So we're going to listen to a song, Nirvana for Mice. Fred, where did you find your unique voice, you know, that is now shaping other students?
Well, that piece we just heard was written about 50 years ago. And I found my voice precisely in the company of my fellow bandmates. At the time, I was admitted to be a composition student at the University of York, but the band was starting to, as a PhD student, and the band was starting to take off, and I decided against it, much to my parents' chagrin. So I stayed with the band instead of becoming a PhD composition student, and learned pretty much everything I know from the process of collaboration. And so you can't make music without collaborating. So the most important thing you can learn how to do is collaborate well. Even things like how to rehearse properly are useful lessons, because there's a good way to rehearse and a bad way to rehearse, and so on and so on. So I was kind of an outsider from academia. I hadn't experienced teaching an academic situation. I hadn't had an academic music teacher. And perhaps it gave me a little bit of space to think about my work outside of that particular bubble, which I think is, you know, I missed out on certain things for sure. But on the other hand, I could focus on the things that I thought were really important.
And that mentorship,
I think that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And it also has paid dividends, because not only has your mentorship been powerful for students like Faye, it also evolved into collaborations as well. Fred collaborated on Wu Fei's album, A Distant Youth, in 2007, along with other artists. So we're going to take a quick listen to a song titled Mad Season. finally, Faye, before we wrap up in the last 30 seconds or so, I mean, this mentorship has been so profound for you. What advice do you have for people in a similar path? Because I imagine you're becoming a mentor as well. How important mentorship is?
I feel like it is really profound experience. I feel very lucky. I would think for whoever's listening is to jump out of your comfort zone to really, and that's the true growth. And that's where you get to taste like dishes, cuisines that you've never tasted. But and then how you become stronger is you have lots of multi-nutrients. And then just sticking with the one thing that you know of. So I think that's really my growth. And Fred has always told me, even when I left Mills, I asked him, what's the one principle that I should have for taking on projects? And he said, always think of something that you think you know you have truly learned something. Mm-hmm. And that's still my principle. And I love it.
And that is a wonderful way to end the show. That is it for Insight today. Thank you both so much for this conversation.
Cheers.
Thank you.
I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll catch you back here on Monday.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.